In his last war with France, William the Conqueror delivered Mantes to the flames, but that fire which destroyed the church of Our Lady shed such a lurid and terrific light that the King of England's horse took fright, began to rear and prance, and threw his rider, who was mortally wounded. Attributing the fatal accident to the burning of the Virgin's beautiful church, he bequeathed a considerable sum for the purpose of rebuilding it. Being conveyed to an abbey near Rouen, the Conqueror of England was roused at the dawn of day on the 7th of September, 1087, by the sound of a matin bell. "What is that?" he asked, raising his head with difficulty, his face pale and emaciated, though still retaining a portion of that proud, masculine beauty which even the Saxon chroniclers ascribe to him. Being told that it was the bells of St. Mary's Church ringing prime, "Blessed Lady Mary," said the Norman hero, raising his hands, "to thee I commend my soul. Mayest thou reconcile me to thy Son, my Lord Jesus." And with these words he expired. Henry I, his son, who usurped the crown from Robert, his elder brother, whose eyes he caused to be put out, was devout only in theory. Although he affected much piety and made many splendid foundations in England, where he introduced the Norman architecture, yet he burned several churches in Normandy. For instance, he burned in 1120 the Cathedral of Lisieux, with the city itself. The ancient cathedral, which dated from the first ages of Christianity, was dedicated to the Virgin, like most of the Norman cathedrals. The punishment of this sacrilegious offense quickly followed. At the end of the same year, the vessel which carried Henry's only son, Prince William of England, with two of the king's illegitimate children, foundered at sea, during a calm moonlight night, not far from Barfleur. From that time forward, Henry was never seen to smile. The Empress Matilda, daughter of this prince, had a signal proof of the Virgin's protection and her power over the elements. While at war with Stephen of Blois, she was forced to embark for Normandy in unsettled weather, which very soon became stormy, and was overtaken in the very shoals where her brother William had perished, by one of those frightful tempests which are only seen on the angry ocean. The horizon was sheeted with a vast black cloud, which reached from sea to sky like a funeral pall. The mountain billows reared themselves up with ominous slowness, to dash with terrific crash against the sides of the royal bark, which they raised high in the air at one moment, to hurl it, the next, into the yawning abyss. The sailors shook their heads despondingly, whilst the English lords, crossing themselves devoutly, recommended themselves to God and the Blessed Virgin, and to St. George, the patron of chivalry. Matilda, while standing on the deck, and her composed countenance, though pale, belied not the race of the heroes from which she sprung. "Be of good cheer, my lords," she said, turning to her faithful nobles. "Our Lady is kind and powerful. She will save us. I will sing her a hymn of thanksgiving as soon as we descry the coast, and I pledge myself to build her an abbey wherever we shall land." Scarcely had the Anglo-Norman princess spoken these words when the waves were seen to grow smooth, the winds were suddenly hushed, and the vessel flew swiftly over a calm sea. A dark speck was soon discerned on the blue sky. As the clouds cleared away, it grew larger and larger still. It was a lofty hill, whose bare summit was crowned with a hermitage, and a vast forest was seen stretching far and away in the background of the picture. Then was heard the hoarse cry, so impatiently expected from the man at the masthead, "Contre Rene, vici terre!" "Sing, O Queen, here is the land!" And Matilda instantly began to sing her hymn to the Virgin, which was joyfully repeated by the English barons, which clasped hands and bare heads. The bark, miraculously preserved from shipwreck, soon cast anchor in the little bay of Équerdreville, in Lower Normandy. Matilda's first care on landing was to point out the site of her monastery, which she named the Abbey of the Vow, and before quitting the neighborhood, she herself laid the first stone. John Lackland, who died of indigestion in a Saxon abbey, was buried by his own request, with great pomp, in the beautiful Anglo-Norman Cathedral of Our Lady of Worcester. But if we may believe the ancient chronicles, the body of that base and cruel prince, who had steeped his hands in the innocent blood of his lawful king, Arthur of Britannia, and who had a mind to turn Turk in order to conciliate the Moors of Spain, did not long pollute the sacred dwelling of Mary. They relate that strange noises were heard by night in that dishonored tomb, blasphemies, fearful shouts of laughter, revelry, and all manner of terrifying sounds, which caused the monks of Worcester secretly to exhume the body of the reprobate prince and transfer it to some less holy place. The fast of Saturday in honor of the Blessed Virgin was observed by the English people from the time of William Rufus. There was in those days a certain famous robber, a Saxon, without doubt, since St. Anselm, the Norman prelate, who relates the antidote, calls him a robber without any circumlocution. And he, one morning, entered the cottage of a poor widow with intent to rob her. Finding nothing to his taste, he coolly seated himself on the only spare stool in the little dark room, with its earthen floor, where the widow was sitting at her wheel, and addressed her with a winning smile. "Well, gossip, have you had your breakfast?" "Is it I, good sir?" replied the poor woman, pausing a moment in her work. "God forbid! Is it not Saturday? I fast every Saturday throughout the year." "Every Saturday?" repeated the astonished robber. "And why?" "Why, in honor of the Blessed Virgin, to be sure. Do you not know that there is the reason why she prevents you and others like you from dying unshriven?" "If that be so," said the robber, "I am very glad to know it, and from henceforth I make a vow to fast myself." He kept his word, and the Blessed Virgin, on her side, did not fail him at the hour of his death. Being mortally wounded on a perilous expedition, she miraculously prolonged his life until he had time to make his peace with God. St. Anselm also informs us that the bold and haughty Norman knights piously honored Mary, whilst oppressing, with all their might, the conquered Saxons. One of them, a great lord, had for valets and pages a troop of vagabonds already ready for mischief, and for Stuart an incarnate devil, who constantly persuaded the poor baron now to outrage one, now to plunder another, and again to kill that other, so that not a day passed without some detestable crime. In the midst of all this wickedness, he kept praying devoutly to the Virgin night and morning, saluting her with seven aves and as many profound genuflections, for which reason his infernal steward could not strangle him, as he intended, and he finally obtained the grace of a sincere conversion.